This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj, and this is Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. Now, injuries can be tough for those who just love to play. Whether you're a professional athlete or a gym rat, all you want to do after recovering from an injury is to hit the ground running. But in his monthly segment on sports medicine, Dr. Harjit Singh is going to tell you why hitting the ground running is probably not a good idea. He's going to explain the recovery process from the point of injury to the return of play. Just a heads up that we're going to be taking your questions via Twitter at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or via phone at 03-7733-2900. So please do get in touch. Hello, Dr. Harjit.
Hi.
Thank you for coming to the studio and bringing bluish skies with you.
Yeah, it's safer inside also still.
It is. Speaking of safe, when we say injury, what do we really mean? Does an ache actually qualify as an injury, for example?
Well, if you look at it, by definition, it probably does. Because an injury is anything that changes the structure or the function of a body part. If there is an external trauma, that means there's a force onto a joint, onto a body part, onto a bone, ligament, or anything else, which then changes the physiological function or structure, requiring a period of rest and rehabilitation for recovery. I think that's a safe way to look at injury, because then you open up the spectrum of a very minor knock to something catastrophic and taking you totally off for some longer period of time.
So technically an injury is something temporary?
Okay, by concept, yes. If you look at it, it's going to be something temporary if it's picked up early and treated appropriately. But if you have a severe injury, you could have, totally a decapitated part, a limb. Those injuries are massive and they tend to be permanent. But the idea is to get you back as good as you can get. You may not always reach what you were before, but we try to bring you close. I think that's the goal for any treating physician.
Are there different classes or categories of injuries?
Yeah, we tend to classify every injury that we treat because we find that it's easy to communicate between physicians. Even if you look at the bones, we just start something simple. You can have a fracture, which is a hairline. It's incomplete, so to speak, or it's totally broken, and then we call it a complete fracture. Then we look at how badly it's broken, the structure, whether it involves the joint. So we are able to classify it based on severity. But I think that if you're looking at explaining it as something simple, complex, I think that will be an easier way to understand it for the layperson. But we use a lot of classifications to be able to communicate the severity of injury.
Would you be able to classify it based on the length of the injury? For example, if it's an acute injury or a chronic injury?
Yeah, I think that's a nice way to look at it, because if you look at injury, sometimes we use timeline to say that something is acute or chronic. Sometimes we use the term overuse or acute. Overuse is that there is multiple smaller injuries which accumulate, have not been treated appropriately, and they bring about symptoms at a later time. So chronic and acute is one way to look at it. Overuse and acute is the other way that we look at it. Sometimes we look at it as an acute or a recurrent injury. That means you have injured the part before, treated well, came back and you injure it again. So there are multiple ways that we look at injury.
Okay, so we're going to be talking a lot today about the recovery from injury. But for now, I want to just dial it all the way back to perhaps even before you get injured. Is it all possible, at all possible, to prevent injuries?
Yeah, I think if we were able to prevent injuries, we won't be talking about it today. Yeah, but I think you never are able to prevent 100% of acute injuries. Okay, you can play safe, you can be prepared, you can be conditioned, But if you're going to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and, you know, an awkward tackle, an awkward fall, a slippery surface, you can bring about an injury. But the idea is that if you follow certain, protocols or tenets to be safe, you tend to be able to keep away the bigger kind of injuries. So, I mean, whenever we look at it, if you're going to take part in any sport, time and time again, we've said that you get a pre-participation medical evaluation.
What does that evaluation generally contain?
So generally, we pick out any big problems, predominantly with the heart, and whether you have things like exercise-induced asthma. There is an assessment of your flexibility. So they do tell you that, okay, you know, you're not too flexible. Therefore, you know, when you start, you need to have good warm-up and you need to also then be mindful at the base at which you start. Yeah, so I think if you get that initial part, you are aware of that kind of initial part, you're starting at a good base.
But this sounds like a good point to start, not just for athletes, but for regular people as well. Like,
yeah, no, what I'm meaning is anybody who wants to take part.
Mm.
You don't have to be... I think the elite athletes, those who are at that level, they have been screened a long time ago. You have to be of a particular quality and ability to actually reach that level. So I think in their teens, they are already screened and they have been cleared. It doesn't clear 100%, but you are going to pick the bigger problems. Now, say if you want to take part in a sport, then you have to always be mindful of the technique. You know, if you're going to play tennis, you pick up the motions of the technique properly. I think these days you can easily get someone to teach you. You've got good tutoring videos, but the best one is to engage someone, a good coach, to take you through the motions properly, and then you build from that. And that actually prevents a lot of overuse injuries, the ones that will bite you in the future.
Yeah, it's something actually I struggled with quite a bit when I was growing up because I played both badminton and tennis.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, two obviously very different motions of the arm, one with the wrist and the other without. And yes, as you mentioned, I was very fortunate to have an excellent tennis coach.
So because if you play two sports and you try to mash up both the motions, then you're in big trouble. So that's one part of it. And then even the equipment that you use, you can't just pick someone's racket. And not necessarily the most expensive equipment is the best for you at that particular moment. So sometimes that's extremely important. The attire that you use is important. I've had good footballers playing all the time on natural surfaces with appropriate footwear, unfortunately rupture their ACL, reconstructed, doing very well, back to sports, one fine day, play on a synthetic surface with the inappropriate footwear, because the synthetic surface tends to require certain dry feel footwear, and they re-rupture their ligament. So, I mean, footwear, attire, very, very important.
I'm glad you brought up this point about footwear. In my housing area, we have a lovely big padang with a walking track around it. And, you know, when I do manage to go out for a walk or a run, I almost every other day have to kind of gently tell an old uncle or auntie, please don't do this in your slippers.
It's so,
and I've seen a couple of them take a tumble before.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's a disaster waiting to happen. Particularly if you're older, you don't have... you don't have extremely good balance that a young person has. So a small stumble can just be a fracture at the hip. So I think that the equipment that you use is important. Understanding that regardless of how rushed you are, the warm-up and the warm-down, important. And I think most importantly is that when you start anything, start at a proper base. Start slow, start low, and build yourself up. You keep yourself very, very safe.
Sometimes we talk about people who are injury prone. Is there really such a thing as injury prone, or are they just not picking up the signs early enough?
You sometimes have a slighter sized person, going into sports extremely gung-ho, not shirking from any challenge. I think if that's an area where you are technically going to be injury prone, 10-year-old kid plays as a goalie with 18-year-old boys kicking the ball hard, putting his palm out, he's definitely going to get injured. I don't think you have someone who's actually classically injury prone unless you do have certain connective tissue problems. But those people tend to not partake in sports. They kind of know.
Oh, you're referring to medical conditions.
Yeah, medical conditions.
Even brittle bones.
Yes, those kind of things. And they tend to stay away from contact sports.
Mm. Is it at all possible to leave an injury to let it heal on its own? I know I shouldn't be asking an orthopedic surgeon this.
You should, because there are many a time that I leave an injury. See, the thing is, you have to educate the person, the patient, on what's actually going on. I've had patients coming to me with an MRI saying that I've got this A, and what do I do for A? So then I actually ask him whether this A is causing symptoms, and he says no. So I say, what was the MRI for? No, we were looking at something, and then it just picked up at the adjacent joint that there's something going on. So these are definitely leave it alone. No symptoms, leave it alone. Of course, I've had challenges where you tend to talk to the patient. I think when you have partial injuries, we tend to have a bit of a problem because the symptoms or the condition doesn't manifest itself very, very clearly. And these are the ones also, there's a lot of discussion with the patient on the symptomatology of the problem. And sometimes partial injuries are not too bad. We build up the other body parts to support the injured part and we leave it alone. So it's not necessary that we treat everything, contrary to popular belief.
Would you mind giving me just very quickly some examples of these conditions that can be self-managed or at home, perhaps?
Okay, so self-managing injuries. I think if you, say, have a knock on the thigh, it's a bit sore, you're still up and about, that soreness, you've put an ice pack, tends to settle down over a day or two. Of course, you can manage it on your own. If you have a twisting injury at futsal at the ankle, even putting weight on the leg for two or three steps, it's extremely difficult. Now, that's the one you can't manage. So I feel that if you have a condition, a swollen joint, barring a broken bone, that's extremely obvious, and simple anti-inflammatories or over-the-shelf paracetamol, ice packs, gets you better the next day. And by half and by the second day, you are so much better. I think those are manageable away from the setup.
Okay, actually, I have a couple of more questions on this. I'm very interested in this whole subject of self-managing injuries.
Not a very safe way.
But we're going to have to take a short break now. When we return, we'll pick up the conversation on recovering from injuries. You're more than welcome to send us your questions via Twitter at BFM Radio or by WhatsApping us at 01878 9889 or by calling us at 03773 2900. In the studio with me is Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant, orthopaedic surgeon. This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj, and this is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. Now, consultant orthopaedic surgeon Dr. Hardeep Singh is here in the studio, and he's talking about his favorite subject, injuries, and how to recover from them. We're also taking your questions via Twitter at BFM Radio, WhatsApp on 01878 9889, or via phone at 03773 2900. Now, before the break, we were talking about self-managing injuries, and I want to be able to speak to you, Dr. Harjit, a little bit about this whole idea of people do get injured, like you said, you know, they have a fall, they have a tumble, and then they go through this whole, let's just wait and see, how bad could it be? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think everybody makes choices, and you can wait however long you want, but let's not make it an unsafe wait. So the way I look at it is that, yes, we get a knock day in, day out, and a lot of times a lot of people around us, or we will tell ourselves that, hey, I've had this before, and you know, it settled down within a day or two,
right?
Let's wait and see. Okay, fine. Wait and see. But be mindful if the body part or the joint or that area is extremely swollen and you can't even put your hand on it without wincing badly in pain, then please, you don't need to go and see a specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Just go to your neighborhood doctor to have it looked at. Not everything requires an X-ray. Most of the time, let him have a look, let him examine the part and make sure that it's safe. I think that's the way to go. But if you get just a simple knock and you could continue playing or you could continue that exercise that you were doing without a further increase in pain, you come home, you put an ice pack and you're all right. I think 48 hours is my cutoff.
Okay. Yeah. Is there a danger in this sort of situation, the second situation that you mentioned, where there might be an incorrect or perhaps even overuse of over-the-counter painkillers?
I think that we shouldn't, you know, this doom and gloom about pain-relieving meds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think if an injury is severe enough, the pain med's going to kill it off completely.
Right.
Yeah, so it will dull you a bit and probably make you a bit functional, but you know, everybody knows that, hey, this is just not what I usually have.
Mm.
This is something more. And that makes people see us. So I think that I don't think in the modern world it's totally like, let's just see. There will be a fear of seeing the doctor most of the time. But I think if you look at it very practically, a badly swollen joint and you don't have full range of motion, a body part which is extremely swollen, the inability to put weight on the injured part if it's the lower limb, these are red flags. These red flags require you to be seen at a medical setup.
Okay, I'm glad you said that because a lot of the times what you also get is people, like you say, have a fear of going to the doctor. So instead, they choose...
go to the traditional healer.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, but I think... I'll be fair to say that while that is valid, the area where I work at, we have a few traditional healers who actually examine and say, you know what, you go down the road and probably you need an X-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually come to me with a scribble from him saying that, you know, he thinks there's a fracture. So I think that part is also changing. Everybody wants to be safe and everybody wants the best for the customer, the client, the patient.
We definitely need more traditional medicine doctors like that.
Like that, yeah. But I think because I've never created an environment where I just ridicule what they do, and I think they feel a little bit more comfortable. If you keep saying no, no, no to everything that someone does, they're not going to reciprocate. So the idea is you always keep your doors open.
Right.
Yeah, so... yes, we have to accept that our culture, complementary and traditional medicine, continues to play a large part and is also the first go-to point for a large number of people. And most of the time, those people go to them for injuries which are perceived to be minor.
Okay.
And most of the time, they are. And no matter what's said and done, if they are appropriately treated, and then they recover and they are fine. If they are not, then they still come to us.
What are your thoughts about going to a chiropractor?
Okay, I think for an acute injury, if you have a chronic injury, like something like an activity-related back pain in a young patient, not too bad, severity not getting worse for a longest period of time, I think it's fine. But there will come a point where you'll just question yourself, is this something more than just the normal thing that I have? You would want it to be imaged. You would want to know more. You would want to cone down to the exact source of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You see, back pain is just back pain. A swollen joint is just a swollen joint. Until you know which part is actually causing that swelling, whether it's the meniscus, the cartilage, the ligaments. Now, if you have predominantly pain, swelling, and an unstable joint, you know that that's something more than just what a chiro or a therapist can work on.
Okay, good. I'm glad you said that again because we've got a question that's come in via WhatsApp right along this thread that helps us reinforce what you've just said, right? It comes from Pochi, who says, good afternoon. This pain on my right arm has been there for 3 months. I've done a few things, but it's not getting better. I feel the pain on certain movements. I squatted to do some cleaning and there was an extreme pain on the back of my right knee. This was 1 month ago. I took Panadol, but it's not helping. Thank you very much for your reply.
So this is classical.
Yes.
You obviously need to see someone, your general physician or an orthopedist to get to the bottom of this. You've tried it out. It's still painful. Now, you've got a painful knee. I said you can have that pain from a number of parts in that knee. Now, just to add on, sometimes pain felt at the knee, maybe from the hip, particularly in children. So time and time again in training, and when I train my juniors that time when I was in service, I used to tell them that in a child complaining of knee pain, make sure you examine the hip, because you might, it's just that referred pain from the hip is manifesting at the knee. Sometimes you have pain from the spine. Patient complains that I've got pain at the knee coming down to my calf. So if you are self-treating, you won't be mindful of these kind of things.
Right. And so then,
Pochi, please go see someone.
Great advice.
And get sorted out.
Yes. And so then this leads very neatly into this whole idea of, yes, there are some injuries that are easy to diagnose, but there are some that are far trickier because of what you've just mentioned.
Yeah. So, I mean, 95% are the easy ones, thank God. Okay. So you just need a little bit of patience and you pick up that 95%. The game is the other 5%. When the injuries are partial, then it depends on the demands of the patient. So I've had patients who come to me and they tell me, I injured my knee 2-3 weeks ago.
Okay.
These are people who are extremely athletic. And they said, you know what, I rested, I did some physio, I allowed it to rest it out and I've come back. I'm okay. So I said, okay, you're okay, that's good. Because when someone tells me that they're okay and they are able athletes, I take it. I said, okay, you're okay means you're okay. Now, then I talk to them, you know. But I say, how much can you go back to what you normally do? And they say that, you know, I have a fear. Okay, for me, that is that 5%. That is why that is what I listen to very carefully. If they tell me that they had an injury on the knee and when I want to go back 100%, I just worry that I don't trust my knee completely.
Right.
Yeah, although you may not be looking at a totally ruptured ligament, you are looking at a partially ruptured ligament and you are looking at a high-grade partial injury, which probably needs something more than just physio.
Right.
So you have to be mindful about all these kind of things, because when you subject a patient to an MRI or an X-ray, we use a lot of MRI for ligament injuries, you have to have already in your mind a structure of what you're looking for. You can't just rely on what's going to be seen on the MRI and then examine the patient. So you speak to the patient, you examine the knee appropriately with all the tests that we have trained to do, and you formulate that this is possibly the injury and you do an MRI to confirm that. Now the MRI will tell you, oh, there is a partial injury of the ACL. But you then know that moving this knee seemed a bit looser than it should be, and the patient saying, I'm scared that I don't trust this knee. So you know that this partial injury probably needs something more than physio, possibly surgery.
Okay. You mentioned physio. We've actually had a question that just slipped in about physio. It says, hi, doc, I'm Zaidi. I have slipped disc and spondylosis. So far, I'm okay, provided I do physio. But I'm not getting better. It gets inflamed when I'm stressed at work. Can physio heal slipped discs and spondylosis? Or should I opt for surgery? Or should I see a chiropractor?
You should see a doctor first. Okay, now, but that's a very, very good a good way of looking at a simple condition.
Yes.
A lot of us have back pain. A lot of us attribute it to a slipped disc. Okay. Not all back pain is caused by a slipped disc. There are tests that indicate the likelihood of it being a slipped disc. And a lot of slipped discs are appropriately managed by lifestyle modifications, physiotherapy and proper conditioning. and even ergonomics at the office. Mm. Okay. People who are less active, we bring them about to maybe swimming, some conditioning work, and they do very, very well. Now, some of them don't. They need something more. Then we move on to doing appropriate imaging studies to see how bad this is. Not all slip discs would require an MRI from the outset, but those that don't recover, they require the MRI, so then you can consider surgery. It depends on the improvement with care. If you do physio, I mean, he wasn't very clear. He said, I'm okay with physio,
but not getting better.
So I don't really know what that means. So the way I take it is, when he does physio, that particular time, he feels good.
A temporary
for
relief.
A short period of time, and then it comes back. Now, when you look at therapy, rehabilitation, there are a lot of facets to it. The initial part is to control the pain, okay, and muscle spasm. Mm. That is passive therapy. There are a lot of things that are done onto the patient by machines or manually, and that helps. As the pain gets better, we move them on to active exercises to build up the strength of the muscle core, which helps the lower back. It's not only about treating the structure, it's about treating everything around it. And although you have back pain, sometimes there are tightness of the muscles at the hip, which attribute to it. So it's not just a simple one and zero. There are a lot of things that we look at.
So when you look at treatment options, right, are we broadly then looking at surgery at one end of the scale and then just maybe looking at non-operation on the other?
Whether you're looking at the Jedi's or the dark side. Okay, I think there are, I mean, from the outset, if you have a broken bone, which is causing dysfunction, particularly of the lower limb, most of the time you will need surgery in an adult. There are times that the fracture is not too bad and then we cast it, so that's non-surgical. So for structures like bones, it tends to be easier. Okay. Now, when you come to soft tissue injuries of the ligaments, then you really need to look at everything. You need to look at how that injury occurred. You need to look at the timeline at which you are seeing the patient, because then you can examine the joint and know how much swelling or dysfunction there is. Then you need to speak to the patient about what are their expectations and demands for recovery. And then you discuss the options that they have. Of course, if you have a very bad injury, you don't even go on a consideration of a non-surgical option.
Right.
You immediately tell them that you have an extremely bad injury. We need to fix this surgically. And after that, there will be this period of recovery. During this time, you may need to use crutches, you may need to use a brace. And as you get better, we remove this and you are then functional for daily activities and work. But returning to sports is going to be this long.
Right.
They need to understand from the point of their injury to the point of return to play.
And because you've mentioned return to play, then obviously the options on the table for a professional athlete are very different than what you would give to the regular gym goer.
No, I think now we do not discount the gym goer as someone as of a lesser athletic capability. The wants and needs of everybody is almost the same. They want to go back to doing whatever they enjoy. They want to go back doing it in the best possible and fastest manner that they can. But I think the professional athlete and the weekend warriors differ in one sense. Now, if I'm a professional athlete, that's my occupation. No matter what, I have to get back out there because that's the way I earn my money. Okay. Now, if I'm a weekend warrior, say I'm an accountant, but I love to play basketball, I will get treated. I will keep time. What I would want to know is how long do I have to keep away from my day job, okay? And how do I fit therapy around my job after that? So the discussion differs in that sense. I think the potential for recovery, the biology of healing, it's similar. But the way you look at rehabilitation differs. So I think the needs and the wants are almost the same. But the professional athlete, they are totally on. If they need surgery, they will get it done as fast as they can. Mm. They will really go into full-on rehabilitation. And they will take rehabilitation right to the end. Because right at the end of rehabilitation, there is something called return to play and sport-specific exercises.
Right.
And that gives you that last 10% of recovery. So I think that professional athletes, they are different breed. Mm. That's their job.
So you talked about needs and wants. Let's talk about expectations.
Yeah.
This is important, right? Because there is a point of getting to the point where you have sought treatment for your injury. But what can a person expect from the recovery process? It is, of course, different for every person.
Yeah, I think that sometimes you have to taper expectations.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not... I mean, we are not fixing a car part where we just take out a carburetor and we put a new one and you're good to go.
Mm.
Sometimes injuries are severe that our idea is to get you back to walking comfortably instead of playing.
Mm.
If the injury is very, very bad. And patients often need to slowly be made to understand that.
Mm.
So not every surgery brings you back to play. A lot of times we can bring you close, but there are times that we can't. And I think from the word go, the patient is made to understand that, so that both of us have the same kind of idea of the outcome of that procedure or that kind of line of care. Because if they don't understand that, then they will always be disappointed with the final outcome.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
We're going to have to take another short break now, but when we return, we'll pick up the conversation on recovering from injuries. We still have about just over 20 minutes for your questions via Twitter at BFM Radio or by WhatsApping us at 01878 9889 or by calling us at 03773 2900. We've had some questions come in via WhatsApp. We'll get to them after the break. I'm speaking to Dr. Arjit Singh, consultant orthopaedic surgeon, and this is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj and this is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. Consultant orthopaedic surgeon Dr. Arjit Singh is talking about his favourite subject, injuries, and how to recover from them. We're also taking your questions via Twitter at BFM Radio, WhatsApp on 01878 9889 or by phone at 03773 2900. The questions are coming in thick and fast. So before we get back to our interview, what I thought I'd do is just take a couple of questions from WhatsApp.
Okay.
This one is pretty interesting. Sports Day is an annual event at my school, and despite the advice that I give to my students to warm up before they go to sprint in the track events, there will always be a student who ends up collapsing either after or during the race. What's the proper treatment to respond to such scenario?
Okay. Collapsing is a very scary word.
Mm.
Okay. So I probably take it that someone's running the sprint and then collapses because he has a hamstring pull or something simpler like that. I think if they collapse for any other reason, call the ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I always feel that the warm-up is the key. And we always feel that if that can be educated or explained to the teenage athlete, then that mindset will carry them through to adulthood and it'll never be a problem. But in the excitement to participate, most of the time you forget about the warm-up. Until they get injured, then they will never forget to warm up. I think if you do it as a group warm-up, you tend to, you know, get most of them to comply.
Right.
Okay. But cikgu or teacher, not only is the warm-up important, after the run, the warm-down is important.
Okay.
It's not about running the race and then going to the Milo
van.
I don't know whether we have that now.
I think we still do.
Yeah, so I think, yes, go to the Milo van, but the warm-down after exercise is extremely important.
Mm.
And I think that dealing with injuries, yes, they are bound to happen, but you are able to minimize them.
Okay.
Because if you're looking at the teenage athlete or the active young participant, the changes of puberty where the bones tend to grow faster than the soft tissue gets them a little bit less flexible. So without a proper warm-up, they are prone to, you know, minor hamstring pulls, injuries at the knee, and that can really take them away from sports.
Okay. We've also got a question here from a runner about knee pain. Hema says that she's a regular runner and she's only 29 years old. She's getting terrible knee pain due to running. Are there any good sort of supplements that she can take to reduce knee pain due to sports injuries?
Yeah, so I think that's easy to answer. You need to know why you're having the knee pain. It is not the supplement that's going to take the knee pain away. It's treating your problem that's going to get the knee pain away. Now, I think if you're an avid runner, you'll be reading about the whole range of pains that runners get over the knee. And if you look at them, a lot of them are overuse injuries related to the surface on which they run, the intensity at which they do it, the rest and play cycles that you do, and the distances that you build up on. Now, just fine-tuning that is going to reduce pain in 95% of runners. And even the footwear that you use makes a big difference. So the way I look at it, I can't recommend you a supplement to get your knee pain to go away without knowing why the knee pain was there in the first place.
Okay. We have one more interesting question. David wants to know whether you have any advice for what happens if this person, David, or somebody that he knows gets injured abroad. What are the best courses of action if I'm injured in a location where I'm not familiar with the hospital or medical system?
You still have hospitals there. I think, okay, I think in the event of an emergency, I would make myself make my way to an emergency unit. The general protocols for emergency injury is the same, any part of the world.
Right.
Of course, if you're caught with an injury in somewhere remote, then I guess the RICE protocol, rest, splint apart, ice it and try to get your way to medical help is the best way to go.
Okay. Moving back to the treatment of injuries, right? So how does the procedure or the treatment option that is prescribed actually affect recovery and also then affect the return to play state?
Okay. That's a very complex question. Initially, when we assess, when I assess my patients, we try to determine the severity of the injury.
Okay.
That's number one. And in assessing the severity of the injury, we also assess the character of the patient. Now, we then determine whether we can get away with the least invasive procedure, which means medication, protection of the part, and gradual therapy and rehabilitation, or we need to move on to things which are more invasive, surgical options, which include minimally keyhole surgeries or the whole open your joint or part kind of surgery. Now, if you have a minor, a smaller injury from the outset, your chances of returning to play is high. The caveat is that you must not be lax on your physiotherapy and rehabilitation.
Right.
So I often tell them that it's 40% the treating physician and treatment, 40% therapy and rehabilitation, 10% the patient, and 10% the man upstairs or nature or whatever you say, and the unseen variables. So I think that everything has to fit in. You can have a perfect surgery or perfect treatment in the hospital, extremely poor rehabilitation, and you don't get a good result. You can have an inappropriate diagnosis, fantastic rehabilitation, and you still don't get results. So everything has to be good. Now, if you get good surgical care or non-surgical care in the hospital, you are doing your physiotherapy and rehabilitation correctly, you don't take shortcuts, because time and time again, regardless of what we do, the biology, that healing process of tissue is determined. That means you need X amount of rest. As you get stronger, this amount of load, this amount of function, this amount of range of motion, this is the point that we take off the protective devices, and this is how we get you back.
Right.
Now, if we tend to feel good halfway through and we then think that we are okay, you are looking for trouble. Most of the time, nothing dramatic happens, but you don't get full recovery. So I think everything is important.
Okay. You mentioned physiotherapy. We've got a question here asking if you could explain the rationale behind ice therapy and heat therapy in physio centers, which is sometimes done one after the other. The second part of the question, if ice is done to reduce inflammation, then why should heat be introduced immediately afterwards?
Okay. So, I mean, I probably keep this a bit simple. Now, if you have an acute injury or a painful part after activity or injury, then normally ice is the way to go. Now, the way you apply the ice, you don't apply it directly on your skin.
Okay.
You normally can just put a towel or a dry towel you put an ice pack. A lot of people ask me how long. Over the knee, 20 minutes, 2 to 3 hours. If you put it for 20 minutes, it keeps the part cool enough for maybe about 2 hours or 3 hours. Now, the use of ice. Now, the stiffness that you get, say, lower back stiffness upon after inactivity, and you're about to do your stretches, which was prescribed by your therapist.
Right.
Putting a warm pack helps increase the flexibility of those musculature, and then you can do your exercises well. So that's the way I look at cold and hot.
Okay.
Okay. Now, there are people who come with a stiff neck, not after activity, after inactivity.
Right.
You know? And those are the ones that do with a warm pack.
Mm.
Sometimes we do interchange based on the comfort. But if you look at the concept, injurious, inflammation, cold to reduce it, that's what he also feels.
Yeah, and I hope that answers the questions that both Jonathan Liao and Selvara Nim also sent in. They also both asked whether you apply hot or ice packs to treat minor pain, or in the case of Selvara Nim, he says he's 52 and he regularly exercises, how to get rid of aches and pains after exercise, which is exactly what you just mentioned.
Warm down.
Yes. Okay. Dr. Arjit, do you have any advice for a frozen shoulder that's giving May great pain?
Yeah, so that's okay. Yeah, okay. The frozen shoulder, you see, if you look at it, the term frozen shoulder, the medical term is adhesive capsulitis. Some big mumbo jumbo of a name, which actually explains a very specific condition.
Okay.
Okay. A stiff shoulder is not frozen shoulder. Okay. A painful shoulder is not necessarily a frozen shoulder. So when we speak of frozen shoulders, we actually examine the patient, and if you have restriction of movement in a lot, in almost every direction, imaging studies show certain changes in the joint, then we say frozen shoulder. Now, if you have the simple, I have pain when I'm lying down at the side, I can't sleep on my side, when I get up in the morning, it's very painful. But I generally have restriction in certain directions, then you are probably dealing with other conditions like an impingement syndrome or a rotator cuff problem. And it's not frozen shoulder.
Okay.
So I think that the take home is that, although I'm not answering her directly, is that ensure that it's frozen shoulder. In a frozen shoulder, therapy helps very, very well. Sometimes you do need some injections. Sometimes if you are very, very resistive to all methods of care, even surgery and manipulation is important. So you're looking at a whole spectrum.
So make sure that you get a correct
accurate diagnosis.
In fact, that ties into this WhatsApp question. He says that he's a regular weightlifter, been having pain in my left arm, particularly around the bicep shoulder area. Can't really do exercises with heavy weights like bench pressing. What's the best course of action to recuperate?
Okay, so if you lift heavy weights, okay, you are doing them regularly, I'm sure you have done them long enough to understand that you need to vary your exercises. Mm-hmm. That means you have to have enough rest in between.
Mm-hmm.
The most common problem offhand without examining you would probably be your biceps tendon.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, rest and therapy, dropping the weights, going more for your repetitions than the amount of weight that you do rests it out.
Mm-hmm.
And ultrasound helps to image it, and you also have physiotherapeutic modalities that help. Failing which, surgery.
Okay.
Simple.
We're fast running out of time, but then I want to take one more last question via WhatsApp because this is very specific. And
lots of questions.
Lots of questions.
Stressful.
Popular subject. I've had a PCL tear, grade 3 last year. My orthopedic surgeon consultant recommended me to go for non-surgical recovery and physio after that. After 3 months, my knee did get better, but the PCL did not completely heal. Right now, I can't run or jump without feeling pain. When I squat, I will lose my balance. My orthopedician said that my ligament was elongated during recovery and recommended me to go for surgery if I want a better recovery. So I was wondering whether I should go for a second opinion or straight for surgery. And more importantly, Ray wants to know, will I be able to play sports after PCL surgery? Everything we've been talking about neatly encapsulated.
Okay, very simple. When in doubt, go for a second opinion. Your treating surgeon will not mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like the way he has treated you.
Mm-hmm.
So he has gone for the most non-invasive, and as you recover partially, mm-hmm. but not good enough to your expectations.
Right.
And he now offers you something more invasive,
mm-hmm.
and you have your doubts. You can ask someone else, no problems. We are fine with that. The second thing is the part where do we guarantee you the ability to play sports after. Only taxes and death are guaranteed in life. I think that he would probably go back and explain to you that, you know, even the position that you play at football determines whether you can play back with ACL reconstruction surgery. PCL reconstruction surgery. So I think he has gone through everything with you. Maybe if you speak to him a little bit more and you actually bring forth your questions and your doubts, everything will be clear.
Okay.
I like the way he thinks, that surgeon.
Thank you, Dr. Hajit, for joining us again today and clearing up our doubts on recovering from injuries. I barely got through half of my questions. I think we're going to have to do this again next month, part two of recovering from injuries.
Part two, that'll be a first. Huh?
Yeah.
We normally finish everything.
Thank you again for joining us.
Welcome.
One quick note before we leave. Our annual Health and Living Junior event is happening on the 5th of October at Connection at the Vertical in Bangsar South. If you have pressing concerns or burning questions about children's health issues, this is the place to be as we bring together a host of medical experts. And the highlight will be the town hall with Hannah Yeo, the Deputy Minister of Women, Family and Community Development. You can direct your questions to her too. We're giving away a pair of tickets right now to Health and Living Junior. All you need to do is drop us a WhatsApp message at 01-8789-8899 with your name and address. If you're the lucky winner, we will be in touch with you in a day or two. This has been the Health and Living segment on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.